with changes in tide, certain weather conditions, they'll actually be revealed. And that happened in this particular case. Now, unfortunately, just as we have bottle collectors who are of some concern with land archaeology, some members of the diving community, in fact, are private collectors as well, and they do, in fact, go into wrecks looking for treasure. I see it as a bit of a Biggles sort of approach to Treasure Island sort of approach to wrecks, basically. And in fact, divers used to actually literally use explosives, underwater explosives, actually blow up wrecks to actually try and locate gold, metallic objects and things like that. So that's one of the reasons why we actually have the legal protection of the actual wrecks, because as you can imagine, I mean, if you went over to View Bank and put a stick of dynamite in there and blew that up, what would you lose? Exactly the same thing happens with the shipwreck. That unfortunately did happen with the William Saul's house. Word got out amongst the diving community that that this wreck was there, and quite a lot of damage was actually done to it. And so Heritage Victoria went out to investigate. We have groups of archaeologists who are divers. They specialise in marine archaeology, and they actually go out and do the work of archaeologists, except they're doing it wet, I suppose you can say.
Just to put in a good word, though, for the diving community as well, they have had quite a large about turn and have become much more self-regulatory. And most of those people who were there would probably be volunteers who are really just recreational divers. They do a lot of work with this. And the other people who do a lot of work with this are the police divers. They're very keen to help. Heritage issues. So I would suspect that on that boat you probably only have three or four people who actually work with us, and the rest would be very helpful and volunteers.
And the police rescue divers particularly like getting involved, because often the wrecks are quite deep and quite dangerous, and it means they can actually practice their skills as well as contributing something to the state. Anyway, the actual site was actually protected because of the amount of damage, and of course because it was such an old site and a lot of it was intact. So in fact now, as it says there, it's a protected zone, no boats or diving within 250 metres. So now legally you need to get permission from Heritage Victoria, our organisation, to actually dive in that particular area. Okay, right, now divers, as I said, maritime archaeologists work similarly to land archaeologists, except of course there are certain difficulties in doing their job which land archaeologists don't have. For example, with diving, they may be able to spend only 2 hours a time on actually down there on one particular dive. And of course they have to use the same sort of material that the land archaeologists use, but of course they have to be waterproof. With the William Saul's house, when the archaeologists went down there in 1983 to do a survey for 6 weeks, they dug two trenches. The first thing they actually had to do was actually lay out grid lines so they could actually map what the site looked like, so that whenever they found an artefact they could locate exactly what it is. And as you can see, it's not like getting a bit of string out. And of course they need to have drawings as they actually take things out for the particular site. And I mean, I think that's pretty amazing technology myself, being able to ride underwater. And of course photos were taken throughout the entire time. And of course these were the actual lines that were drawn around, I think. They actually put pipes around it to actually measure out the particular area. And again, the same type of techniques perhaps which land archaeologists use, tags to actually identify where things are so people can map them. Look, I may just very quickly go back to the... Oh, how do I stop this thing? Go back to the very first slide, and I'll flip back again. This is the type of thing you find when you find a wreck. When the divers first found the William Saul's house, they actually found the shape like that. But a lot of that had collapsed by the time the other divers had come through with crowbars and actually smashed it up. So what you actually have is basically something like that when you start off with. I mean, some wrecks you don't find very much at all. So, and of course, in this situation as well, changing weather conditions will also change what happens with the wreck. So you may have sand coming over it and things like that. So you're working under lots of different types of difficulties. Okay, where were we? Now, anybody recognise what that may be there? No, yeah, it does actually, yeah. You're right, yeah. Actually, it's a part of a barrel. Most of the transportation of goods in that time were actually in barrels, of course. And we have, there were over 1,000 casks or barrels actually on the William Salt House. And they were carrying things like whiskey, a lot of whiskey, nails, cider, vinegar, flour, and a lot of meat as well, a lot of salted pork, a lot of salted beef. Lots of cases, the bones, and in some cases even parts of the meat were actually still there as well. The crew would of course eaten salted meat on the trip. One reference I read suggests that in fact they preferred to capture rats and kill them and eat them themselves rather than actually eat the salted meat. So this particular wreck tells a lot about the type of things that people brought up, things that had to be imported into the settlement, and also the type of techniques that were used to build them. And that gives you a bit of an overview book of the wreck. And you can see there the anchor chain there. So what we're mainly bringing up is metallic objects, wooden objects. Not very much fabric is actually found. If I think in our collection we've only got one piece of fabric, and sometimes leather as well. Okay, and there you can see the divers working. Quite dusty down there as well. And again, are they the barrels? Sorry, I have to see from that particular angle.
Someone
has
written a very interesting thesis
on
the barrel.
So, there we go. Well, I think it's interesting is the fact that the William Salt House is actually trading from Canada to Port Phillip. This is the time during the Navigation Acts when the colonies weren't actually meant to trade between themselves, according to British legislation at the time. So in fact they were doing a bit of a sneaky apparently. Let me see in there what looks like wicker. Yeah. Another thing the William Salt House held was, I'll go back to that one, was wicker baskets, and these wicker baskets were filled with champagne bottles, and some of them in fact hadn't, the cork hadn't actually been destroyed. And champagne in Melbourne was one of the most favourite drinks. There were in fact the 20 baskets of champagne that were being imported into Melbourne, and then remember there were 50 public houses, 50 pubs in Melbourne in 1841. So yeah, and that was in the little Lonsdale dig in Melbourne, and they also found a lot of champagne bottles as well, so Melbourne's quite
These
famous for that.
These were interesting though, because they were full, and actually Heritage Victoria with the museum ran public wine tasting with several very eminent wine tasters, including James Halliday, and I was lucky enough to get some. I think I was doing the runaround assistant on that particular day. And happened to be there when they did a formal non-public tasting, and I had the opportunity to taste the champagne.
Oh, did you? I didn't know that.
It was horrible.
It was 141 years old.
You never get a chance to taste this sort of stuff, but I took one look at it, and it really hadn't preserved very much.
Very solid. this is sort of, when we bring metallic objects up, this is often the condition they're in, and it's very important that they get straight into conservation. If once they're removed from the water in the open air, then they degrade very quickly. And that's one of the problems with people actually taking things from ships. They don't look after them, basically. As I said, vandalism. So a lot of really good objects are actually lost. I mean, things actually have to be soaked in distilled water for, was it,
the main
months?
Problem is that as they dry, of course, salt crystallises, and as it crystallises, it disturbs the surface area and breaks it up. So there is a real problem that we need to keep them in equilibrium when we bring them up, so they are stored
in water.
Water surrounding.
And also, wrecks are also home to many animals as well. And I've never been diving. Jane's dived. I haven't dived. Apparently, there's another world down there, and a very beautiful. So, yeah. And so the divers talk about, you know, fish sort of talking to them as well. Okay, this is a bilge pump. This has actually been brought up into our collection. And that was used for actually pumping water out of the ship. And it's made out of lead and leather. I wonder how that you got it up, actually. There's another view of it there. So we actually, in the collection, we also, by bringing these sort of things up, we also get an idea of the type of technology that was used in those particular times. When I first saw this slide, I thought it was, you know, a nice pot or something like that. I took the marine archaeologist and it's a bilge pump, so it, you know, lost a bit of its romance. Okay, and here again you can see the barrels over there. And a lot of the barrel lids as well. This one's the one I was telling you that it's actually got Montreal written on it, 1841 Montreal. And that was really exciting because, as I said, it showed that people were actually trading between the colonies where they weren't meant to. I bought another one for you to have a look at, which was actually brought up from there as well. But you can see, that gives you an idea of the type of size of the actual ones there.
From the eastern part of Canada that they paint, so that would have come around the Horn.
Yeah.
I suppose the western Canada wasn't much developed.
No, it would have been eastern Canada. No, it would have been the eastern Canada. Yeah. So it's a long trip with all that.
Come all the way around the Horn and then.
They could have actually picked up things on the way, but I think that the actual those particular barrels actually had the meat in them. Ooh. So the meat and the champagne together sounds like a pretty ordinary type of meal. Okay. And again, there's the wicker baskets again. There are also 20 cases of Saturn that were brought over as well. But I was quite surprised when I saw how the wicker had actually been preserved. I mean, maybe it was just covered up in the sand and that preserved it. Okay, and again, the divers just doing their stuff. Ah, now, these are actually the bottles. There in the water.
The basket around there.
Yeah, you can just see the basket around the edge. So it shows you with the sand over the 141 years, the sand is just covered it up. Okay, and so as we had the site drawing with View Bank, also we have, of course, the site drawing with the William Salt House. So laying out where was found what and things like that. Yeah. And that's the first. Two trenches were dug on the first. Dug in marine archaeology?
Still dug.
Yeah.
Still
an
appropriate term.
Just a bit more difficult. Yeah. And this is another area there. So everything's basically plotted out and recorded. A lot of archaeology, from my observation, seems to be everything needs to be recorded, and it's a very exacting task. It's not sort of just glamour, etc. Okay, again, another picture of the an actual sketch drawing of the one of the barrel heads. That's the one we saw earlier. Two actual drawings are taken as well. Prime mess beef. I bet. And some of the other things that were actually brought up from the wreck as well. everyday domestic type of things that's quite interesting. And again, these go to our nice big pottery pot. And now with these, they're not sure if these actually came from the actual William Saul house as well. In some cases, you actually will have debris from the sea actually washing onto a shipwreck. So it's very, it'd be hard to say whether this was actually worn by a sailor at the time or whether it's come from 30 k's down the coast, someone's thrown it into the cliff, you know what I mean? So there's all these sort of art things as well. But what I can find out is quite unusual to find pieces of clothing, because usually they... This is actually from this isn't from the William Saul Pass, this is from the Clonmelt. Yeah. Often what is found is, of course, cutlery, but knives aren't often found because the blades actually disintegrate, apparently, because they're made of steel. So in fact they actually corrode, so you find lots of knife handles, but you don't actually find that. So if that, or people just didn't use knives in that day, I mean.
Actually, down at Warrnambool,
when we saw that, they thought that so many of those men always carried a knife themselves, and they actually used that knife for eating, cutting and eating, so
that
they
didn't have an implement.
But that's the sort of condition they come up on. And if any of you are interested, you've got an open day next weekend, haven't you?
Yes.
Well, if any of you are interested, on Monday, the conservation laboratory is actually open for tours during the day. So if you want to come along and see.
Monday,
no, the following Monday. Yeah, Sunday and the Monday, but you've of course got your open days. Again, these are from the Clonmel. I always say Clonique. It must be missing. And this actually is part of the plumbing of the actual ship. So again, these have actually, some conservation work has been done on these, so you can see how they've started to clean them up. And you have beautiful objects like that as well. Okay, and that's basically it. So look, sorry I've gone over time.
And that's most interesting. Yeah. I'm sure if there's any more questions, although Sarah and Jane have been very kind to
include us in the
conversation, and that as it's gone along, and that's been great. Is there a query anyone does have at the moment that you'd like to... Okay.
Before we move on, I'll just leave out for you to have a look if you want to before we go. There's a few bits of things we've bought. There's a little fish thing we showed you.
Clear the table
and some doll's legs from Viewbank. Often you get bits of doll and the plaster. And these are my favourite. I always take these when I go out because I love them and I think they're absolutely gorgeous for no particular reason. These are from the Fiji, which sank in 1891, and they're little clay animals, and I think they were children's toys. I think that's a lovely story because I know people actually died on that particular wreck, and I sort of think, well, this actually belonged to some little girl, or little boy. But anyway, you're quite welcome to have a look at those. And I'd like to thank you for inviting us both.
Oh, very pleased. And I'll just ask Barbara to thank you on our behalf.
Thank you
very much.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
we
you.
We admire your work. And keep it up.
We will. Thanks very much.
Can I throw in an ad? No, it's just from our point of view. Sarah made the mention about shipwrecks over 75 years are automatically protected. In Victoria, so are all historical archaeological sites, and by definition, effectively anything that's older than 50 years will fit into that. So we do have site just basic site reporting forms, which perhaps we could send some to you if anyone knows of anywhere that you think is somewhere that we should have on our inventory, and especially if you're concerned that something might be done to it. They are protected, whether we know about them or not. The legislation is quite broad, they are protected, so we're always happy to hear if you are. Yeah, if there's anything you're aware of that you feel might fit into a category of archaeology, then we'd be more than delighted to hear about it. Mm-hmm. So do let us know.
Maybe while we have you here, as you mentioned before about the clay, or what we've known as Wunderlich in more recent times, it's had several names, but that the Heritage Council has put an order on that. But I guess one of our concerns is the ongoing maintenance of that and the watching of it. Now, do you see local societies such as ours having a role in that, and then, you know, if it is deteriorating, what can be done in actual fact by the privately owned buildings or whatever it might be that we're trying to keep?
It's very difficult for us to enforce maintenance on people. Whilst we can, under the Act, we can place something on the register and there is a requirement that if any works are to be done, unless a permit exemption has been granted, then it is necessary that any works done are approved by us. Within the Act, we do have the ability to insist on maintenance works being done if something is deliberately being let run into the ground. To the best of my knowledge, that's never ever been enacted or imposed on anybody, because as soon as it gets back down to a cost issue, there are arguments about the economic viability of actually doing that sort of work. What we can do, though, to assist is that we have got access to funding, and we do have funds that are available for emergency works, either as a low interest loan or as a grant, depending on the capacity of the owners to pay it back and their status. For example, we'd be more likely to make a grant to a historical society who might own something as against a private individual who is running it. So there is, financially, there is that ability there. As far as the, I think groups such as yourselves are extremely important from a maintenance point of view, from a local community education and lobbying role, if nothing else.
And a watchdog as well. That's often how we have the ability to go out to an area where something's, you know, the bulldozer's outside and we think it should be on the register. And often it's local historical societies that ring us up and say, I think you should come and have a look at that. And so then we can actually go out and do that.
We were very early involved. Phil was president at the time when the works were happening, you know, down at this particular site, and the stack and drying sheets, isn't the stack, have now been kept.
Thank you very much.
And I'm quite sure Sarah and Jane will be happy to continue any sort of information.
Just maybe before we do break up, we should get more details of the ability to go and have a look at the conservation. On the Monday,
in your brochure. Have you got the
We have got the brochure.
Lovely, aren't they?
Oh,
yes.
Thank you very much.